Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise Pros, Stan the Man, Paul Segretto, Badlands, baby. Franchising today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchise today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchise today. Franchise today.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017. I'm reporting live from Houston, Texas, and my co-host, Stan Friedman from Atlanta, is back from the Multi-Unit Franchising Conference. Welcome back, Stan.
Good to be home, Paul. That was a really one blast of a week. That conference has grown. I could not be more impressed with how large that conference has become and the quality of the attendees, the quality of the speakers. Wow, it was an action-packed 3 days and just a great time. But, you know, this old tired body, you know, I'm not cut from the same fabric I used to be, Paul. I come home tired.
I think the same fabric's there. There's a couple of moth holes in it right now.
Yeah, it was a great time, though. Great to see a lot of old friends and make a lot of new ones. And, you know, that conference, the energy there is probably the greatest vibe of any franchising event that I've ever participated in. I mean, you're just in a room with multi-unit operators. You're in a room with operators who are bigger than some of the brands that they operate.
Yeah.
You know, there were guys there with 700 stores. Paul, come on.
Yeah.
There are franchisors that don't come close to that.
Yeah. It always amazes me working around multi-unit operators how big their empires are and how smart they are. I mean, there's not a one of them that are at that level that doesn't really want to drill down into unit economics, which, of course, is a pillar of sensible franchising. And you, speaking about that, you know, we last week we certainly missed you. The interview last week with David Nielsen, the CEO and co-founder of Guidant Financial, was really a great, riveting interview and a nice twist to what we normally talk about, which of course is with, you know, franchisors, both mature and emerging brands. But David really gave us some great insight into the credit markets and obviously franchise finance as a whole. But, you know, definitely your perspective, as always, would have been very welcomed, and so it was sorely missed last week.
Well, I'm sorry I missed it, because David is not just a great and articulate speaker. He's a great friend, too, and I would have enjoyed having the privilege of participating and not just listening back to the podcast. But you carried the water, Paul. It went off real well. I know Badlands tried to sing the song twice, but other than that, I don't think there was a glitch.
Yeah, that happened.
Hey, I want to...
And while I was thinking about it, I said, you know, Stan could have done the show from the airlines, but I don't know. They might have dragged you off the flight.
Yeah, we don't want to go there either. I want to give a shout out, though, to our good friend Michael Side, who along with Joyce Mazzaro, has published another Dummies book. And I got an autographed copy from Michael. I'm thrilled to have it. I can't wait to dig into it. It's Franchise Management for Dummies.
Yep.
And so it looks like it's going to be a long and great read, but I'm betting there's a ton of nuggets in here, Paul, so I can't wait to dig in and have a look at it. But congratulations to both Michael and Joyce.
Yeah, that was really phenomenal to read that, and I'm looking forward to getting my copy as well. Any other highlights you'd like to share out of the multi-unit franchising conference before we move forward?
Marcus, how do you say his last name? The prophet, Marcus Lee
Lemonis. Marcus Lemonis.
You want to talk about a riveting and different kind of speaker. Have you ever heard Marcus speak?
No, I was actually disappointed last year at, I think it was in Denver. He was supposed to be in the booth right behind us, and he didn't show up. and it was understandable. I mean, his company was going into an IPO that day it was being launched on the stock exchange. So I'll forgive him on that.
Well, you want to talk about a riveting speaker. I know we're going to hear some great things out of Michael Elliott today, but I've never seen a conference open with a celebrity TV personality opening up, talking about where he came from and how he got here and almost committing suicide almost twice. He shares and opens up to the audience and then invites others to do the same. You never saw so many people hit the door. he was pointing to people in the audience and say, "Tell us something about you that people would be surprised to know." but you know, he said, "Look, if I'm going to speak and be believed, I got to be straight with you. I got to live with you. You got to live with me. We got to trust each other. I'm going to tell you things about me that nobody would know." And boy, I mean, that the temperature in the room just shifted. But he was riveting. He was absolutely riveting. Great speaker, and totally and completely engaging. I can't wait to start watching the show. I've never watched it. I've seen trailers, I'm going to start watching the program because of my exposure to him in Las Vegas. It was an incredible session. Just overall, Paul, can't say enough about Gary Treece, Diane Phipps, and the entire crew at Update. They just get it done.
So before we go to today's guest, I would like to announce that next week our guest is Gary Findlay from Restoration One. Should be a very interesting show. I also received a commitment from Tom Kaiser, assistant editor at Franchise Times, who will be on the show in the very near future to talk about the shifting urban landscape, millennials and franchising, which would be great. And so we've got some really compelling guests coming on. And speaking about a compelling guest, we have one today, Michael Elliott, the founder and CEO of Hammer & Nails. And a quote that I read was, "The Hammer & Nails brand has truly discovered an untapped sector of the massive health and wellness industry. No one is delivering male-centered grooming services the way we are." And, of course, that was by Michael Elliott himself. Michael, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be with you guys. I got to say, I love the intro to your show. It's the coolest, the coolest intro. I love it.
Well, that cool intro was delivered by none other than Eric Badlands Booker, who is one of my closest friends. He is a competitive eater. So that makes him a professional athlete of sorts.
Right,
but I've known Badlands for 14 or 15 years, see him every year in Buffalo at the National Buffalo Wing Fest, and he is one supreme rapper and composer, and he did that for Paul and for me, and we love opening and closing with it every week.
Wow, very cool, very cool.
Yep, it was great. We've had it now on the show for the last couple of months. We've been getting a lot of, great response from it, but of course, as Stan said, we got to listen to him twice last week because sometimes technology does not cooperate, and it decided to play on its own the second time, but all was good. Well, welcome to the show, Michael, and certainly we appreciate the great folks at Fishman Public Relations of introducing us to you and for you being here today. I want to start out with, because you've got quite a storied past, some humble beginnings. So why don't you take us way back, tell us a little bit about Michael Elliott, the person, and bring us close to the, to where we are today.
Sure. I'm 50 now. And I say that because, my journey really started about 30 years ago. Maybe 32 years ago, because I turned 18 years old, and after being a ward of the state of Pennsylvania and sort of being in the system, when I turned 18, I was no longer in the state's care, and I was I was homeless. Like I literally had to, you know, not finish high school because I had to, you know, I had to be a man. I had to take care of myself and get a job. And so from 18 to 20, it was really tough because, I didn't have a place to live. I was officially a homeless, young man in Philly. And, just dreaming of changing my life. And I think I was motivated, quite honestly, by, wanting to prove that I was special. You know, when you're a kid and you have a family and you have the kind of, teenage life that I had, I kind of felt like the only reason I was in the situation that I was in was because no one cared enough. And so, it may sound a little crazy, but I was sort of, motivated by wanting to, be special, to be desired, and not by people that didn't know me, but by my family. And so, imagine being driven by that for years, wanting to prove that you're special. And that was just me. It took me years to realize that, I didn't have to define myself that way. But I started from there, from the streets of Philly. By 20, I was off the streets and I had my first entrepreneurial, idea. And I was an entrepreneur and I loved hip hop music. And so for, a big part of my young adult life, everything I did as an entrepreneur, involved hip hop. Fast forward about 21 years ago, my love affair ended. I was really disenfranchised with just, the business of hip hop, and I wanted to do something different. But I was approaching 30, and that's not typically the time in an adult's life where they, do a complete 180 in terms of a career, especially when you have responsibilities like I had. But I thought about what I wanted to do with the next chapter of my life. I realized that I'd always loved the movie business and decided I was going to be in the business. So I moved to California and decided I was going to be a screenwriter. And I bought a book on screenwriting. I read it one weekend. And then I went to Blockbuster Video and I re-rented all my favorite movies from When Harry Met Sally to Scarface. And I began to watch movies that I'd seen 1,000 times before, but with this new information from this book that I had read. And 13 months later, I sold my first screenplay to 20th Century Fox. And 4 years later, it was a movie in the theaters, and I was a writer. And so I've written, 5 movies, and they've generated over $100 million at the box office. But I didn't own those movies. And so about 5 years ago, I was thinking about my life and where I was. I knew I was 5 years from 50. And while I had these posters on my wall with my name on them, and while I've always been humbled by turning on HBO and seeing something that I wrote, playing on TV, I didn't feel financially secure because I got paid well to write movies, but again, I didn't own those movies. And so the real money did not come to me. And when I looked around at some of my highly financially successful friends, the one thing they all had in common was they owned something. They owned a business that made money every day. And so my goal was, to do something else, to do something that could create a real financial legacy for my family. And I didn't know what that was going to be, Paul and Stan. I had absolutely no idea what else I was going to do outside of the movie business. And that all changed, you know, about 4 years ago when I had my light bulb moment for Hammer and Nails.
And we're going to talk more about Hammer and Nails in just a minute. But before we leave this chapter of your life, Paul, this man is nominated for not one, not two, not three, but four Primetime Emmy Awards. And when I looked you up,
wow,
Michael, and saw your filmography, your name is tied to post-production consulting on Stargate, dozens of episodes, MacGyver. I mean, these are programs we've all heard about, and you got it out of a book? Wow! This is amazing.
Yeah.
You've been able to take charge of your life, and I noted, too, as I looked at you on LinkedIn, that you've got some radio in your past as well. So, I mean, you've covered an awful lot of bases. I said to Paul before we went live today that if a cat has nine lives, this guy's a tiger.
That's what he said.
Well,
that's what he said.
Well,
that's what he said.
I have to say that, you know, there's a lot of, with Michael Elliott being such a common name, you know, there's a lot of, I'll just say that some of the things that you may have read that I have been involved in, I wasn't that Michael Elliott.
Mm.
So I can't take all the credit for everything that you've read. But I had a really great career in the movie.
Well, my hat's off to you, and we can't wait to learn more about how you've evolved from doing what you've done in the movies and in Hollywood to learning more about the world that you're in today with Hammer and Nails, and how the brand was born and how it's evolved. And we'll talk first through the consumer side of the business, and and we'll lead up to the franchising piece. So let's talk about the birth of the business first.
Sure. So it really all started about 4 years ago in March of 2013. And I'll say that I'm not a big pedicure or manicure guy. It's not something that I've done regularly, but I really needed a pedicure. I really needed a pedicure that day. I needed professional help. And my friend took me to a nail salon. And it was a Sunday and it was crowded. There were women everywhere. And I remember sitting in the chair feeling very out of place. I looked at the canary yellow walls and the flowers, and, you know, I just felt out of place, and I felt uncomfortable. And I remember thinking about how every time I've ever walked into a nail salon to get a service like this, I felt the same way. And I knew that there were other men who probably felt this way as well. And I remember thinking in that moment, I wish there was a place where men who wanted or needed hand and foot grooming could go, where they didn't have to feel like a fish out of water, where they didn't have to feel judged, where they didn't have to feel uncomfortable. And it was a simple thought. And I remember saying to myself, if that place existed, it should be called Hammer and Nails. And the name just came to me in that moment. And, you know, I didn't really decide to do it, you know, the business at that point. But that's when the idea came to me. And I began to talk to some of my friends about it and get their opinions. And, you know, and then I went online and I started doing research. And it wasn't a lot of research that I could gather because nothing like this had ever been done before. There had never been a men's grooming shop with a focus on hand and foot grooming. But I did read something that was stated by the International Spa Association. And essentially it said that when a guy is at a spa, 40% of men at spas get a pedicure. And I remember thinking, really? Like, I know 40% of men don't get pedicures, but when a guy is at a spa, he's more likely to get a pedicure. Why? Is it because when he's at the spa, he's away from his judgmental guy friends? Is it because he feels safe and or comfortable in that environment? The reality was that was the case. And that statistic really cemented this idea, because I thought, well, why can't I create a place where a guy would feel 100% comfortable getting a service that he needs? Because I understood that for men who routinely get pedicures, they don't do it for the reasons women do. They don't do it because they want polish on their nails. They do it because they understand that getting a pedicure is about hygiene. It's about health. And so I saw an opportunity to, you know, create a place for men to get this service. One of my friends, when I told him the idea initially, he said, "But Michael, do you really think there's enough men who get this type of service to build a business concept around?" And I said to my friend, "Well, you don't really get it, because hammer and nails isn't just for the guy who already gets a manicure. It's for the guy who doesn't, because there are far more men that have never had a pedicure than the men that have." And so my idea was, well, what if I create a place that would appeal to the guy that would never step foot in a salon, ever? That if I can create a place that guy would want to come to and return every single month, I could literally invent a market that no one sees but me. And then I thought, if I create this a place that's magical, a place that is experiential, a place that isn't just about a service, I make it special, I'm going to appeal to a market that you also don't see, which is women. Because I realize that women have very limited gift options for men. How many bottles of cologne and sweaters and scarves can you give a guy when he graduates, when he gets promoted, on Father's Day, Valentine's Day, Christmas, on his birthday? If I can create a place that's gift worthy, I'm going to appeal to women who are going to buy gift cards. And so that was some of the thinking that sort of went into this concept. And I felt like the way to do it is to create a place that doesn't look or feel like a salon at all. There's no pedicure chairs. There's no manicure tables. There's nothing feminine about it. And that was the plan. So I found this old auto sign, a vintage auto sign, Stan and Paul. It's 17 feet long. It's massive. And I thought, this is going to be my design inspiration. If I can create a place where this old vintage auto sign looks like it's supposed to be on this wall, I'm on to something. And so I created the first hammer and nails. Designed it myself. And the week before I opened, one of the cleaning crew, which is a woman, she said to me, "Excuse me, sir, but what is this place?" And I laughed, because I thought, wow, this is a woman. And a woman does not know. She's in a place where a man can get a pedicure and a manicure and feel comfortable. I did it. And so that's sort of how it was born.
And, Paul, this brings a whole new meaning to the word manicure, doesn't it? M-A-N.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. You know, I think, Michael, you know, going back, oh, God, it must be 6-7 years ago, and my wife kept saying, because I kept having an issue with an ingrown toenail, she's, "Go get a pedicure. Go get a pedicure." And reluctantly, and it was probably more the pain than anything, because – I didn't want to go into a salon with a bunch of women, but I went.
Right.
I was sold on it.
Matter
of fact, the first time we were there, and my wife was in a couple of chairs away, and she went to pay, and my pedicure was like twice as much as hers. And she said, "What did he get?" And she asked me, and I said, "I got everything. I mean, paraffin wax, you give me everything." And then next time she sat next to me, And she started talking to me. And I put my hand up. I said, time out. Here's my space. I'm relaxing.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah,
time
I mean,
out.
And this is great because there's so many people that wouldn't take that
right.
jump into going for a pedicure. And what I found yeah. unique in looking at your brand, because we know there are some, you know, men's grooming
yep.
brands
yep.
that are out there right
yep.
now. It is becoming more and yep. more popular space. But most
yep.
of them that I've seen start out hair care, shaves, add-on pedicures
yep.
and manicures, and quite frankly,
yep.
I go to one of them and I won't name, but I never see anybody getting in a pedicure and a manicure, and you went the
oh
opposite direction.
Well, you know what's interesting about what you just said was I thought about that. Like, I realized that there were these salons, men's salons, where you could get a pedicure. But the one thing they had in common was they were all haircut focused, right? And the chair
mm-hmm.
where you can get a pedicure was like in the corner, in the back. It was sort of, you know, and you know, what I realized was that guys care about what other guys think of them. So, you know, if you're the guy that is comfortable getting a pedicure, or, you know, you feel like you need one, are you really going to get that service in front of 30 other dudes getting haircuts? No, you're not. And so, yeah, I did. I went the opposite to create a place that was sort of the focus was hand and foot grooming, where, you know, you feel comfortable because you know that when you walk into this room, every other guy there is equally comfortable getting the service you're there to get as well, you know, and to make that the sort of focus, or at least have it share the spotlight with haircuts and shaves.
So, Paul, in the press release I've read, it states that Hammer and Nails is a men's grooming shop providing hand and care and haircuts, hand and foot care and haircuts and shaves in a man cave nirvana, which would explain to me why I read an entrepreneur that, you know, that we've got some NBA players that we all know, like LeBron and others, who
mm-hmm.
frequent men's pedicures.
Yeah.
Who else, though, Michael?
Yeah.
Tell us, who is the typical customer? Is this a younger
wow.
or an older man? Is this a person of color, or is it cross-ethnic and ethnicities?
Yeah.
Tell us
sure.
about who the consumer is.
You know what? That's a really great question, because I think a lot of people assume that there's a type of guy who
right.
would get this type of service, right?
Right.
He's a white collar professional because, you know, he needs his hands to look great because he shakes a lot of hands, or he's a guy that's really into fashion, or he's a metrosexual guy, or he's a gay guy. There's all of these sort of preconceived types that people have had in their mind for years. And in fact, I remember being on Shark Tank, and Damon John asked me about, he asked me a question about, the question was, are you going to have tailoring? Are you going to offer tailoring at Hammer and Nail? Because, and I'm quoting him, because where I go in New York, when I go there, I can also look at fabrics for my suits and I can order a good suit. Are you going to do that? And what wasn't on Shark Tank, because, you know, they edit it, was my response. And basically my response had to do with this very question. For you to, you know, to ask me if we're going to have suits at this grooming shop says that you are also one of the people who think that only a certain suit wearing guy would get a pedicure.
Right.
That you know what I mean? Like, that you think that too. I believed that there was no one type of guy. I just had to show it. And so I can tell you that at my shop in Los Angeles, it is not uncommon to see a 60-year-old white guy reading the news on his iPad while getting a pedicure, sitting next to you know, an African-American guy who, you know, is 22 years old with a baseball cap on. And he's sitting next to, you know, he's sitting next to, you know, that guy you watch every week on your favorite sitcom.
Wow.
And he's sitting next to one of the players from the Buffalo Bills who flew in because this is where he comes to get his service. I mean, it literally is every type of guy, every age group, every ethnicity, from all walks of life. And so in thinking about Hammer Nails, again, remember, I knew that there were other brands that offered a pedicure, but the other thing they had in common was they were sort of like, you know, the quote-unquote upscale with the marble, you know, upscale premium kind of place with the marble entry and all of that. Well, I don't own a suit. I'm not a suit-wearing guy. A suit doesn't define my success. I also don't have marble in my home. And so I wanted to create a place that wasn't for, you know, the rich guy or the white-collar guy. You know, I wanted to create a place that felt like the Ford F-150 of men's grooming. I didn't want to be the Hyundai. I didn't want to be the Rolls Royce. I wanted to be the Ford F-150, a place
that
where
makes so much sense.
You know what I mean? A place where the guy who is used to the finer things in life, he feels equally comfortable in this space with the guy who works for DirecTV.
Yeah, in one sentence you've cleared that. You know, I was trying to picture how this transcends so many different demographics, but the 150, the Ford F-150 comparison, boy, that just nailed it for me. Yeah. Hey, you're listening to Franchise Today.
You mean no pun intended, Stan?
No
you
pun
just nailed it. Okay.
Yep.
Go ahead.
That was it. You're listening to Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman, along with Paul Segretto, and we're talking today with Michael Elliott, founder and CEO of Hammer & Nails. Franchise Today is brought to you by the Franchise Foundry, where they've been bringing emerging brands to market for more than 30 years. The Foundry fosters healthy, sustainable growth for their clients, the kind that comes from experience. The Franchise Foundry provides both coaching and consulting, a hybrid approach that delivers more effective solutions for both the franchisor's corporate team as well as their franchisees. The Franchise Foundry is rich in practical hands-on experience and expertise with general business management, operational and change management, digital marketing, and of course, franchise recruitment and development. Plus, the Foundry team can also assist you with creating roadmaps for mergers and acquisitions and guiding you through the process needed to navigate them. Learn more about Paul Segretto and the Franchise Foundry along with their expanding list of clients at www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today is also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. FRM empowers real-time business intelligence, communication, and collaboration between all members of the franchisor's team and prospective as well as existing franchisees. This enables you to simply and seamlessly track, access, and manage all messages to and from prospects and existing franchisees, including text. Legal and compliance is simplified as well with FRM's document management, and even site visits can be digitally facilitated and scored with FRM. Make today the day you give FRM a look and assure that all of your candidate and franchisee correspondence, including texts, are being permanently tracked and stored in candidate and franchisee records. No long-term contracts, multiple upgrades each year at no additional cost, no excuses, just solutions on the web at frmsolutions.com. Well, Michael, I think that you've laid a landscape and a fabric out here for, I've got the theater of the mind going in my mind's eye, seeing myself inside one of these man caves. How many consumers a year does one of your locations service? How big a client base? And is it membership, or can people come and just show up, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, it's both. So currently, there's still one shop, the one that, you know, the corporate store, the one that I started, in 2013, which is in Los Angeles. And that particular shop is just hand and foot grooming. It's 1,000 square feet. It's 7 chairs. It was only, you know, designed to handle or to provide hand and foot grooming for guys. Our franchise locations also have a defined barbering room that's very, very cool, very sexy. All of our future locations will have a barbering room as well, with an average of, I would say, 4 to 5 barbering chairs in the barbering rooms. Our first franchise location opens next month in Midtown Miami, and we will be opening about 7 to 9 locations this year, 4 locations this summer. So we are literally on the verge of our actual rollout of physical franchise locations.
That's interesting. You know, Michael, doing some research for the show, of course, I was able to look into the experience of being mm-hmm. on Shark Tank. And, of course, Franchise Today is very, very proud to have you as a guest, having been on Shark Tank, because we've had, you know, a number of others that have been on Shark Tank, CBS Undercover mm-hmm. Boss, and then also one most recently that was on CNBC's Blue Collar Millionaire, and that was Larry Sutton. So we really feel that this is a way to really kind of dive in and help others learn a yeah. little bit more about the experience. And in particular with mm-hmm. yours, as I read, is that it was actually the idea of franchising that turned off the sharks. And I see that
yeah.
all too
yeah.
often. I don't think yeah. they really look at franchising for what it is. And I know yep. you were steadfast about franchising. Mark Cuban even said that he was kind of fearful you'd spend more time trying to sell franchises than to prove right. The business model. And mm-hmm. so with that in mind, You were convinced, you were committed to move down the road towards franchising.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit
yeah.
about what was going through your mind at that time, and
sure.
also
sure.
how Shark Tank actually helped propel you
yeah.
to the next step into franchising.
Well, sure. So I always believe in having a plan. Like, you know, when I decided I was going to be a screenwriter, I had a plan. When I approached this idea of opening Hammer & Nails, from the very beginning, it was with a focus on being a national brand within 5 years. The reason, you know, I was sort of thinking that way was because, you know, I wasn't really looking for another, you know, $5,000 a month in additional income outside of my, you know, my writing career. I was looking to create, you know, something significant. And so, you know, I also understood that I was going to be first to market, and that there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there with a lot more money than I, that if successful, I could introduce, if I didn't have the right vision, the right plan, I could introduce this concept and watch other people run with it. And I look up one day and, you know, there are, it's not uncommon to see a shop with this focus in any major city. While I still have one shop or two in LA, I didn't want that to be my story. So from the very beginning, it was about franchising. I thought about franchising even when I looked at my first location. When I looked at my first location, I knew that I needed to be on a street that everyone in the United States had heard of. It was either going to be Rodeo Drive, Sunset Boulevard, or Melrose Avenue. And that's why I chose Melrose Avenue, because I wanted to establish a national stage. And I truly believe that that helped me, because, you know, when I first opened Hammer & Nails on opening day, Good Morning America did a feature story on my shop. Not just the local news, but Good Morning America did a feature on this 1,000 square foot 7 chair shop in LA. In fact, it was on ABC World News Tonight. That's how big of a story it was. And I think it all had to do with execution. I had a great name. The shop looked really great. It was a unique focus. So 5 weeks after I opened the shop, I checked my email, and there was a message that said, Shark Tank loves Hammer and Nails. It's my favorite show. I thought maybe this was a joke or something, but I opened up the email, and it was an invitation to be on Shark Tank Season 6. I did think that perhaps it was premature. I mean, I had only been open for 5 weeks, but this is the chance of a lifetime. So fast forward to Shark Tank. I went there specifically looking for the capital I would need to begin developing a franchise program. And it didn't go over well. A, they didn't get it. Mr. Wonderful said this would never work. And you're right. You know, Mark Cuban in particular was really bothered by my vision and my plan. And he felt like I had the time to just open up one or two shops, you know, and at some point franchise. I didn't feel that way. I went on there. I gave my presentation. They all said no. And in that moment, I knew it was going to work out because I knew what I had. You know, the first year, my little shop in L.A. broke $200,000, and no one had ever done this before. And I knew it was just the beginning. And so what ended up happening, guys, is after my episode aired, I received over 800 requests for franchise information from viewers. But even more significant, I received over 40 emails from viewers who wanted to invest in me and my business. And I'm happy to say that 8 Shark Tank viewers who I had never met became my angel investors. And I raised the $200,000 that I was seeking from the Sharks from 8 viewers of the show that I had never met. And with their belief, their support, their faith in me, I've been able to get this far. About a year and a half ago, I opened a corporate office in California and hired people who knew more about the business of franchising than I. And we started franchising January of 2016.
Amazing. And you know, Paul and I were talking at the beginning of the podcast before we went live today, and I'm sitting here looking at all of this and saying to myself, Paul, how does this guy go from homeless to screenwriting to movies to the Shark Tank, and now he's going to operate a franchise? Well, I guess there are a few things that your brand's got in common with other franchise companies like The Joint and Red Lion Athletics and a little thing called Massage Envy. Tell us about the connection that you've drawn with Michael Leonesio and how that's come together.
Sure. John Leonesio, the founder of Massage Envy, became a mentor in a lot of ways. He got the connection between what I was trying to do in this space and what he had tried to do and succeeded in doing with Massage Envy. And he came aboard to really consult and help me set up the foundation for what we're doing right now, the idea of a membership model and how that works and how that could be, included in my business model. John Leonesio, that was his idea. The adding barbering to the model in a way that feels organic, that was another great, great suggestion John made. Helping me understand how it all works, what ARs are, what area representatives are, and how that works. And so, John is not involved, officially with Hammer and Nails in any capacity now, but I would say, you know, 16 months ago, that it was a 6-month period of time where he literally really helped me lay the foundation for our success. And here we are, you know, about, you know, 14 months after starting our franchise program, and we sold 221 licenses and awarded 18 franchises in 9 states. And that's not bad for a little more than a year.
Yeah, it's certainly not certainly on the hockey stick curve, so to speak.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what you're looking for, who you're looking for in your ideal candidate profile. I mean, what does that individual look like?
You know, so I think first and foremost, it's passion. Like, I think that, you know, this isn't a pizza shop. You know, like, what we do, the type of experience that we offer, it originates with me, and I think you can tell that I'm really passionate about this. I really see a need for it. So finding entrepreneurs who get it, you know, of course, people get into franchising or buy a franchise so that they can make money, and we think they're in the right place with us. But beyond that, people who are genuinely enthusiastic about what we are and what we are and what we do. It would be great if they have some business ownership experience or management experience, but that's not a deal breaker. You know, we have a tremendous support system with, you know, what we provide here at corporate, how we go out into the field and train our franchisees. I've been really blessed to have some really accomplished area representatives who are, you know, super successful with other concepts, who are also, you know, involved in helping support our franchisees. So I would say, you know, passion first, you know, business or management experience is definitely helpful.
We're upcoming, you know, franchise shows or any places that interested parties can meet with you or learn more about the brand?
Sure. I do know that later this month, I'll be actually speaking at the Black Enterprise Magazine hosts an annual Entrepreneur Summit. And this year it's in Houston, and I'm one of the feature speakers. So we'll be there, we'll have a booth in the convention area with our area representative who has the, you know, the Texas market. And later this year, I'm also going to be speaking as a keynote speaker for Fortune magazine this year, which is going to be a tremendous honor. And that's in October. But outside of that, I encourage, you know, listeners to, you know, go to our website, you know, hammerandnailsgrooming.com or hammerandnails-franchising.com, and look at what we have. And if they're interested, just click, and we'll be in contact.
Well, that's great. Well, Michael, certainly appreciate you being our guest today on Franchise
Likewise.
Today, and we wish you continued success. And certainly, I look forward to meeting you in the future at
Likewise.
One of these upcoming events. Sounds great.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your story.
All right.
You know, Stan, really, really an interesting story. You know, what I really loved coming out of this, and we've been, you know, talking a lot, obviously, over the last few months and a couple of years, really comes down to entrepreneurship. And you hear so many people out there, the woe is me. I don't have the money. I have an idea, but I can't get it done. And going back to what you said, I mean, Michael Elliott decided he wanted to be in Hollywood. He wanted to write scripts, so he bought a book. So
right.
It was an investment. to get started at, what was it, $15, $20, $25, $30, bought a book, teaches himself, and then goes out and does it. Talk about compelling drive.
Yeah, I think the real magic, Paul, and if we were to peel the onion back and go to the lowest common denominator, to me, is belief in oneself. You know, it's not the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you need money. Everybody knows the best way to make a small fortune in business is to start with a large one. You've got to have money. But you know, you don't have that money. In the case of a guy like Michael, you didn't go get the money first. You had the fire in the belly first, and the commitment to yourself and the belief in oneself is what I think is the core of successful franchisor stories that we hear. Most everyone we've talked to, Paul, they failed 100 times before they succeeded, or they got lucky, but they weren't dependent on their luck as much as they were on their commitment and belief in self and their drive. So some maybe didn't fail early, they just got it right the first time, but in most cases I think we hear from people who did more than stub their toes and bruise their knees a couple of times. They batted up their faces before they ever saw the fruits of those labors come to fruition. Like guys like Michael have now got a great story to tell and an opportunity to share.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always go back when I hear these, you know, humble beginnings, the idea, everything focused around just that idea. And I think about, you know, Disney, and it all started with a mouse. And you hear about, you know, some of the things with Steve Jobs and, you know, how intent he was on making sure the attention to detail that was there. I heard Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, once say, it didn't matter if there was a component within the computer that was going to be on the four layers of different product that nobody would ever see. In Steve Jobs' mind, he wanted it to look right. It had to be perfectly lined up. It had to be perfect color. It had to look perfect, even though no one would ever see it. And it's that type of attention to detail. But that attention to detail goes deep into their mind. It has to do with their dream. And the way Michael Elliott, you know, articulated today, I mean, he thought about the detail. He thought about the way he wanted it to look. He thought about the way he wanted customers to feel when they sunk into a big leather chair without looking at pale yellow walls or flowers on the wall. And I think, you know, to my own experience in the salon, I'm there and it's an Asian salon, and they've got these mountains that look like Mount Fuji, and why they've got bunny rabbits running across the field, I have no idea, but that's what I get to look at. And I look forward to Michael's place coming to Houston.
Did you say leather chairs, or did I read someplace that it's not just leather chairs, it's luxurious dark wood, steel detail,
yes,
oversized bison leather chairs, personal TVs and noise-canceling headphones, and of course, complimentary beverages. Who would have thought? I got to tell you, though, Paul, the thing that I take out of this interview that stays with me and sticks the most is attitude, belief, and commitment, and you can hear it. It's not just passion. You can hear it in his voice. He reminds me of a lot of people that I know that develop real estate, not builders, but developers. Somebody who can look at a piece of dirt and in their mind's eye, they're already seeing where the clubhouse is going to be, where the cul-de-sacs are going to roll up to the main drive, the tree-lined streets, the pool, the tennis courts. They see it all, and it's that kind of visionary that I believe he is, that you know, along with the right combination of money, belief, luck, you know, looks like the best thing that ever happened to him with the Sharks said no, because he kept his dream alive and found the right people to invest in him, which just goes to prove it's not always just money that makes for the success of a franchise or a entrepreneurial venture, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the big thing about dreams is you got to take action. You got to take, as Tony Robbins says, massive action. Go towards those dreams. They're not going to happen by themselves. A guy like Michael Elliott went after it, He nailed it. Pun intended.
So I changed up my game this week, Paul. You know, I'm usually getting my last swallow of the number two Jimmy John's sandwich before we go on, but today I've got a bag staring me in the face right now that I can't wait to get into as soon as we're done here.
Well, I knew you were going to be an hour late after seeing last night in social media where you ate dinner, one of the most phenomenal places in the country. So I'm surprised you're even hungry.
Yep, it was a side of beef shirt last night with my good friend Ron Feldman, and New York Prime was the best place to do it, right next door to the office, right here in Atlanta. It was a wonderful evening and a great meal. As I said,
great meal.
With an even better friend.
Yep, absolutely. Ron's a great guy. Anyway, next week we have Gary Findlay from Restoration One. Until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.
Franchise Pros, Stan the Man, Paul Segretto, Badlands, baby. Franchising Today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchise Today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchise Today.